Welcome, Photon Warriors. Commence strategic maneuvers at audible command signal. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, begin.
Jackalope Radio presents Movies Hate You. Movies Hate You, with your host, Rob Housechild.
Welcome to the Movies Hate You show. Live from New York or whereabouts, and somewhat live, but who knows, maybe we are, maybe we aren't. Welcome back. The show where movies hate you, but we don't. Well, Todd hates you, but, you know, he's the godhead of Jackalope. He hates everyone. He messes with us like little pawns on a chessboard and moves us around and moves our schedules around.
What the hell are you talking about?
Pits us against each other. You're the godhead, man. You're like the Kim Jong-il of
Jackalope. I don't move
Jackalope.
Anyone. What?
WJLP, Jackalope. Here you are, right? Is that it, JLP? What would be your call letters if you had a traditional radio station, terrestrial?
JAK. We're working on that now, but I don't know how we're going to get yet. We'll see.
You heard it here first, folks. Jackalope will have a actual station, a little house on the side of the road with a big tower in the back, and the call letters WJAK, Jack. Right?
Hopefully.
There was a Jax, a WJAX, I think, here in New York. Jack, right? Wasn't that a format at one time, Jack, where they would just program an iPod?
It was a failed format, yeah. It was like throw everything into the mix.
Wait, who's that? Aside from our godhead producer, Todd Sheets, who likes to call 1-800 numbers for me at my demand... With us, as usual, most times, is the Robin to my Batman, the Cato to my Green Hornet, or Cato to my Pink Panther. You're the Sancho Panza to my Don Quixote. Mr. Ree Lee Peterson's with us. Welcome back, our in-house and sometimes outsourced DVD reviewer.
Assalamu alaikum, my brothers.
We don't go for that talk here, man.
Oh, sorry.
This is like a nationalist, patriotic station, man. We've got a lot of listeners in the Midwest and South, and we don't want to play.
You lost your damn mind. No. We've got listeners all over the world, and we love them all. I don't care where someone's from; they're welcome here.
Assalamualaikum, right? Is that how you say? Assalamualaikum. I should know this. I'm in New York. I should know this.
Sure.
How do they say it in Kansas City, Todd?
Asalaka Mulletville.
They say extra pepperoni. That's what they say.
Asalaka Mulletville.
So lock them up is what they say in Kansas City.
Are there really a lot of mullets there?
Dude, are you kidding? We are the meth capital of America.
The meth mullet capital. Are you a Santorum state?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Jeez.
Makes me kind of sick.
Wow. I'm as disgusted over the whole thing as he is over JFK, you know? He didn't like JFK. He said it made him sick to his stomach. Now, I always found Oliver Stone's films to be interesting at the very least, but they never made me sick to my stomach. So how he could say JFK makes him sick to his stomach really annoys me.
Well, when you're a douchebag, you know.
Listen, man.
Wait,
don't
say that.
Yeah.
Santorum said that about the movie JFK? Wow, that's interesting.
Well, he said it about the actual John F. Kennedy. I was trying to make a movie-related joke out of it. Thanks for blowing it, Sancho Panza, you fat-bellied little donkey rider, you.
Can we just start over?
No, man, we can't start over. No, I want the mistakes in here. I want everyone to hear our mistakes. The mistakes are sometimes as good as the hits. We have to, warts and all, man. Warts and all. Keep your pants on, Lee. I didn't mean it literally. Warts and all.
I'll put them back on. Go ahead.
That's right. What do you want? You know, Todd, I'm gonna skip the VHS because it looks like all your tapes are at the same price. And I don't want to keep repeating the $64 people are charging for your movies. I'm going to skip the Todd Sheets VHS report this
Yay.
Week.
Right?
Yeah, you like that. That's you know, uncalled for. Mystery, what is new? Well, Mystery and myself made a rare appearance in downtown Manhattan. And no, we weren't taking our show on the road, so no one will have us. But we did get to meet a Hollywood legend, which I think one or two shows back, we were promoting this thing. Hal Needham himself, yes, that's right, Hal Needham. If you don't know who he is, then just hang up the phone on this show right now and show off your little window that this is playing in, because we don't want you if you don't know who Hal Needham is. But if you're curious, he is one of the best stuntmen in Hollywood history, if not the best, and also a director, producer, writer, and all-around great guy, because Mr. Ree and myself got to meet him in person.
Indeed.
And he signed stuff for us. And he has a new book out called Stunt Man. His life story. And we got to see, off a 35mm, his wrestling movie, Mr. Ree. Do you want to review that instead of a DVD?
Well, Body Slam, a classic.
Body
Slam.
You know
what was amazing to
me sure
about
we have
that?
Wrestling fans in the audience. I'm sure we do.
We have to.
Sure we do. I mean, you can't all be into Cannibal Holocaust. We have to have some wrestling fans. And you just met John Cena, Mr. Ree.
You know what? It was a whirlwind celebrity weekend for me, because actually, Hal Needham on Friday night. Another celebrity on Friday that I'll talk about maybe in a minute, because it isn't exactly it'll segue into something else, but you're right, John Cena. I took my kids, my son and daughter, to see John Cena at he was doing an autograph like signing thing at Toys R Us Times Square, Manhattan. It was awesome. The man has the biggest hands I've probably ever had around me. And
well, you know what they say about big hands, Mr. Ree.
And that includes your hands, Rob. That includes, you know, I've had your hands around me, and I guess John Cena's hands are bigger than yours. No offense.
But Todd's are bigger than mine, even.
The man is big. He's a big dude.
It sounds like you really liked him. I mean, I took
Hulk Hogan's hand, and I think that John Cena has bigger hands than Hulk Hogan. There you go. Put that in your pipe.
Now, does that mean Cena could beat up Hogan?
Well, I could beat up Hogan right now. My kid could beat up Hogan now, but
that's not fair.
No offense. No, that's not. That's terrible. I love Hulk Hogan. That's terrible.
Have you seen the Hogan porn tape that's going around?
I don't think it's surfaced yet. Has it surfaced? I know that there were rumors about it, but I haven't.
Oh, I don't know. I don't follow these things. I just hear rumors.
I think that somebody was threatening to sell it, and he spoke out about it. But he wasn't sure. The guy probably made more than one in his life, so he probably wasn't sure exactly which one it was. You know, he's like, "Was she a brunette?"
When your hands are that big, you're bound to have made more than one homemade smut tape.
That's right.
So anyway, back to Hal Needham. Let's not get into this worship you have of these oiled up, half naked men.
Okay.
All right. Hal Needham, yes. Who wasn't half naked or oiled up, but he made a movie about wrestlers. What was that all about? Give us a review of the movie.
The movie is called Body Slam, and you know what was interesting to me was that somebody found a 35mm print of this movie, and that's what they screened. They had a 35mm print of what did it come out? 86, 87. So this was kind of coattailing on WrestleMania and the whole rock and wrestling. You know, which would kind of put wrestling into pro wrestling into the mainstream with the offer and all that stuff.
Yeah.
This kind of slid in under that. I'm sure it was inspired by, or somebody had the idea because of that and called. I guess they called Hal up and just hired him to do the movie. It wasn't his project. you know, he didn't write it or anything, but
well, Bobby as Hal told it that night, is that he was at a bar and some people had come in. It was somebody in the local government or something had come in, and you know, he asked about who he was. But then the next time they came in, they say, "Hey, we had this script, blah blah," and he took a look at it, and it all came together. And so it was an independent film. What I found very interesting is that he said he did it without the participation of the, at the time, what was called the WWF, the World Wrestling Federation. But go ahead, you can talk more about that. Go ahead, finish your
report. I think probably at the time, Vince McMahon didn't have the control that he has now. I mean, nowadays, the people that work for him probably are under exclusive contracts, and they make movies. Well, the WWE actually has its own film production and distribution arm, so they make movies for Vince. But at the time, I don't think he had anywhere near the power that he has now for, you know, exclusive contracts or whatever. So they got a bunch of Roddy Piper was in it.
He stars in it. Right?
He's a star. The Tonga Kid is in it. Several other wrestlers make appearances. I think Ric Flair made an appearance. I'm trying to remember. There's one scene where a lot of guys just kind of show up.
Well, at the end, there's like in the front row of the audience, we get to see one of my favorite characters of all time in any medium, Classy Freddie Blassie.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He's there. Ric Flair's there with him in the audience, and yeah, I mean that was phenomenal to see that.
It was, and yeah.
What
and
I find.
Hal said,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I was gonna say one thing that Hal said about the wrestlers. I think someone asked him a question about how easy it was to work with them, or what kind of direction he had to give them. And he said basically he gave them nothing. He said that Piper like came up to him and said, "So, you know, what's going on in this scene?" And he said, well, he gave him a couple of vague ideas about it, and he said, "Okay, fine." And he went back. He went into the dressing room and came back out in half an hour, and they had the whole thing choreographed. Because these guys are, you know, they're professionals at choreographing routines. So, he said he didn't even really have to direct the guys very much as far as the wrestling action.
So, but when they really wrestle, it's not choreographed; it's real, right? But for the movie, they choreographed it. Are you implying that it's somehow staged when we watch WrestleMania or something?
Well, I'm not a person who would ever say it's fake. Actually, what's funny, my 11-year-old son is a huge wrestling fan now, and he just started sixth grade this year, and he was pretty nervous. I think kind of embarrassed about even mentioning the fact that he was into wrestling. I'm not really sure why. I guess a lot of,
you know, well, it has a, it's like saying, but it's like saying you like NASCAR, you know. It comes with its own baggage, cultural, social baggage. And I've noticed that when, you know, I enjoy a good race, and I've been in the pits at a NASCAR race. I've been right there. Work related. A couple times, and spent time, multiple days at a NASCAR event, and there's nothing else like it, let me tell you. And I'm the farthest thing from a hillbilly you'll ever find, and a lot of the people that are involved in it are not hillbillies, have all their teeth, and it gets a bad bad rap, like wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Does, you know,
considered lowbrow, definitely.
Well,
I don't know if he knows that, honestly. I mean, I don't know if at 11 that really is a big part of it, but he said that I guess when he finally came out by wearing a wrestling shirt to school or whatever, and he found out that there were three or four kids in his class who were interested too, of course. But I guess he was in the hallway and some bigger kid said something about, "Oh, you like wrestling? That's fake." And I said, "Well, you know, next time somebody says that to you, just say, well, yeah, like theater. You know, do you go to a play and say, oh, that guy didn't die? He's not really dead." I mean, I don't get.
Yeah, but wait, but it's presented. It's not presented as theater. It's not presented as theater. It may be in the last couple decades, but when we were growing up, it was not presented as theater. It wasn't called World Wrestling Entertainment. That word never got. If anything, you heard sports entertainment. You know, right. And they only changed their name because they legally had to. It had nothing to do with trying to fess up to something.
Right, but I think most people now kind of are in on the joke, or in on. Calling it fake is just, to me, just like an asinine thing to say. It's like.
Well, it's not fake. No, it's not. Yeah, it's not fake necessarily. I mean, it's as fake as. You know, it's less fake than a movie. You know, because if you're gonna throw a punch at me and I'm gonna go flying in a movie, I might have a stunt double, I might have a big airbag to fall into, I might have padding on. I mean, so you know, these if you look at some of the now that we're old enough to see some of our childhood wrestling heroes grow old and watch them addicted to painkillers from the years of taking hits in the ring. I mean, you know, there's an athleticism to it. These guys aren't getting in. It's not like when we were kids where they would put like the main guy in there who like was, you know, had worked out. He's been in a gym. And then like the tubby guy would get in the ring with him. Like just some guy off the street with like the too tight, you know, but he's got the muffin top hanging over his, you know, tight shorts. And he's just slapping this guy around. You never saw that guy again, you know? It's like, it's not like that anymore. Every single guy is like, you know, it's like some kind of faux Roman gladiator games, you know? And I think there's something inside our lizard brains that wants to see the battle. I mean, look at the success of UFC. Another thing that was, you know, has been called faked and it's had a lot of controversy surrounding it. But we have an innate desire to see this kind of combat, you know, good, right or wrong. I'm not here to judge that, but it's absolutely, there's an interest in everyone, male and female, young and old, to watch this type of competition.
Yeah, and also I think with wrestling specifically, I mean, not so much boxing or UFC, but it's more about the comic. I consider pro wrestling to be closer to comic books than anything else. I mean, you've got a clear-cut delineation between good and bad. You've got the good guys and the bad guys.
Yeah, but then they play with that, too, like they do in comic books. Sometimes Superman goes bad. Batman is bad sometimes, right, Todd?
Batman's always awesome.
I didn't say he wasn't awesome or not. Yeah, this guy, what a defender, man.
He's not bad. What does he do bad? He's moral as any human could possibly be.
You're making me choke to death. No, you know, he's a sociopath and he's a vigilante. So he's unlawful technically, and we know they've dealt with that in the comic book. Don't BS me and don't BS my listeners. BS your own listeners, man.
I ain't BSing anybody.
The guy is a sociopath, and I'm sure he's been. I don't read the comics, but I'm sure he's gone to a psychiatrist over the course of these comic books, and they've said you're a sociopath, you're antisocial, you're a vigilante.
You know what? If they've got problems, that's on their own watch, man.
Why don't you just go to police academy, and get the badge and do it right, man? I'm sure somebody told him that somewhere.
It's one of those things where people can't handle the truth, man.
What's the truth?
The Batman rules and the rest drools.
This is like, this is devolved into like a 12-year-old conversation. Wrestling's fake. I don't know. Maybe it is. Batman's cool. Superman sucks.
I like Superman.
Next thing you're going to be writing Led Zeppelin on your notebook, man.
Man, don't get me started.
Well.
Well, so body. How's the movie Body Slam anyway? We start talking about wrestling. Is the movie Body Slam worth seeing? Can you go rent this movie or buy a used VHS for $59,000 on Amazon?
Yeah, I think you'd probably have to. There's no DVD release that I'm aware of, and you know, it's not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination. It's pretty lousy, but.
It suffers from. I think Hal's movies have. It's a weird thing that no matter what type of movie he's done, a big budget Hollywood movie, these little intimate movies, there is an intimacy to his films. There is some kind of. there's a regionalism to all his movies, which I love. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily play well if you're not in on it. And by the way, MGM released Body Slam on DVD, and it is available.
It is. Oh, I stand corrected.
Yeah. Okay. So,
well, then pick it up. Definitely.
I had to check on that. I'm not trying to, you know, I did a little search while you were talking.
Did you check out bmovie.com? That's where I would go.
I didn't. That's right. This is the Movies Hate You show. We're sponsored by bmovie.com. I forgot all about those guys. Thank you, Mr. Ree. Our sponsor has been slighted. We are fired for sure. Bad enough I get all these emails saying, why doesn't Mr. Ree actually review the DVD that we send over for nothing, for free to you? I have to defend you every week to these corporate jerks, man. You know, when is it going to... What do you mean, yeah, well? But this is a job, man. This is a job.
The man's always trying to keep us down.
What are you talking about? What man?
I'm the man. Well, I'm trying to keep myself down.
You're keeping yourself down.
You know what's... In case some of our listeners don't know who Hal Needham is, you want to give a couple of... maybe there's some girls listening. You never know.
I say
doesn't know who Hal Needham is.
I doubt it, but yeah, he could be right. I mean, Hal Needham. I said it earlier. One of the, I mean, you know, look the guy up. I mean, he is, you know, one of the forefathers of modern stuntmen. You know, his film credits. I mean, you know, aside from doubling for people like John Wayne and being in, you know, thousands of Western movies and TV shows over the years and doing all kinds of stunts. He's an innovator of stunt equipment. He's also a writer and director. You might know him as the director of Smokey and the Bandit or The Cannonball Run or Megaforce or Rad. Yeah, the BMX movie Rad. Yeah, he did that. And Body Slam, which I found to be, you know, it's growing up watching these kind of movies. Body Slam was definitely of my kind of teen years. It was a little later, but there's something about it's very 80s, first of all. But there's something about that the humor. I mean, you know, the Asian character walks into frame and you hear the gong. And you know it just the gay jokes and it's just cinema that doesn't happen anymore in a time where it actually appeared harmless when it was happening. And I'm not saying it's not that it is harmless or that it was, but it's just done in such a way that you can't fault it. It's not done with any kind of hatred or there doesn't seem to be a nastiness. It seems like everybody's in on the joke, and I think that's one thing about Hal's movies, that they all do seem to be period little slices of time where people had a lot of fun making them, if nothing else. I mean, you might not like them, but I mean, you can't watch the Cannonball Run movies and tell me those people weren't having a blast for your $5 or whatever you paid to see it. You got to watch a bunch of friends having a good time. Smoking the Bandit's the same thing. I mean, and these are major movies in their time that made tons of money. These are not regional B pictures that somebody discovered, you know, sitting in a vault somewhere. These were major, they were all, you know, studio released films.
Yeah, in the late 70s, early 80s, I mean, he ruled the box office. This you know, those were the big hits. Those were Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars was out as well, but Smokey and the Bandit, I remember that being as big as Star Wars in, you know, where I'm from.
Oh, Smokey and the Bandit was as big as Star Wars. It was huge. Mm-hmm. It was huge. And he told an interesting story about Smokey and the Bandit, that the studio, he said, in their infinite wisdom, which is true when you hear the story, they decided to open it because Burt Reynolds was the number one box office star in the world at that time. They decided to open it in New York. Now, if you've seen Smokey and the Bandit, it's not necessarily a New York film. It can be appreciated now everywhere, but it's a regional picture. It's a hillbilly car chase picture. It's a trucker movie. It's a down-home good old boy movie. And that Hal is a down-home good old boy. He's old school. Mm-hmm. And he's not a Hollywood boy. So they release it in New York and it bombs. He goes, you know, I didn't make this for New York. I don't care if New York ever sees this movie. You need to release this in the South, in the Midwest. These are the people I made it for. And they did, and it went on to make, like, you know, $500 million, you know. So it's, you know, you can lead the horse to water, right? But even with Burt Reynolds, you know, kind of hand-picking the whole project for Hal, because they were buddies, and he had stunt doubled for Burt Reynolds, the studio still thought they knew better than these guys and that they would release it at Radio City Music Hall, of all places, in New York City.
Amazing.
Where I'm sure three or four people went to see it and vomited, you know, because they just couldn't understand what they had walked in on. Hey, speaking of box office money, there's the news going around is this John Carter debacle. John Carter, what is this, a movie about a lawyer? Is this a movie about a factory worker? What is this John Carter, Mr. Ree?
Well, it's a good point. You know, I saw John Carter of Mars, as I will forever call it. Apparently,
weren't they calling it that at one point? John Carter of Mars? But, it you know, I remember the Marvel comics, of course, before reading the books. John Carter, Warlord of Mars. Now, that sounds cool. Just call it Warlord of Mars. Forget about John Carter. Get rid of that name.
Yeah, you know? What I heard as a rumor, anyway, is that the movie Mars Needs Moms from like a year or so ago was such a bomb, it took such a hit with it that it scared them, the whole Mars thing scared them. So it's like,
well, nobody's interested in Mars anymore, you know. That was a very 60s thing. Yeah, nobody's fascinated with Mars. Mars is like, that place next door. Yeah, they just dropped a rover on. There's no monsters on Mars. We just dropped a thing on it. It's freaking robots walking around Mars picking up soil samples. But there's no monsters there. There are no bones. Now, if they had coordinated it with NASA and kind of made up some kind of hoax where we found the bones of this giant two-headed beast that looks like somebody put a sword through its stomach and then released John Carter, maybe they would have made some money.
You'd think, I mean, who knows? I mean, obviously, it cost them so much that they're probably never going to make the money back. But
well, they stand. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, at least people would have known what they were going to see or not going to see. I mean, if you see the name John Carter, like you said, what is it? Is it about a corporate raider? Is it George Clooney? What is it?
It sounds like a George Clooney movie. John Carter, the man who blew the whistle on the pharmaceutical business.
Yeah, it could be anything. And especially if you just see the listing in the paper and you're like, oh, what are we going to go see tonight? John Carter, Michael Clayton, maybe. You know,
yeah, Michael
John Carter of Mars, at least you know, it's a space movie. Okay, well, maybe, yeah, I'll go see that.
Yeah, if they would have said John Carter in space, anything. John Carter fights the monsters. Anything that would have given genre fans a little kind of note, a little kind of, you know, bleep saying, yes, yeah, for you, man, it's for you. I mean, they made this the same botcho mistake when they released one of the best movies ever of the 80s, Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins. Why didn't you just call it The Destroyer, based on the novel, The Destroyer? I'm in line. If you say there's a movie called The Destroyer based on those novels coming out, I'm in line. The Destroyer. Remo Williams. It sounded like a house paint company or something. You know, a movie based on house paint. Remo Williams. It's ridiculous what they do. And The Adventure Begins. We're still waiting for the adventure to end. Where's the next chapter of this?
Yeah, you probably shouldn't call a movie The Adventure Begins unless you're pretty sure there's going to be a part two.
Yeah, you know, now if they had called Star Wars The Adventure Begins, you know, then they would have hit, well, maybe it would have bombed because of that.
Yeah, people might have said, well, I'll wait till, you know, the middle of it. See.
Yeah, what are we, the adventure continues. That's what I want to watch. Yeah. I want to watch that one. That's going to be the good one. Well, I think it's, you know, and also I noticed in some of the failed advertising, well, by the way, John Carter stands to lose, I had heard, upwards of 200 million, which I'm sure for Disney is like, you know, come on, 200 million. I mean, you make a big deal out of it, but, and they didn't blame it on bootlegging, just blame it on bad weekend. The weekend, the opening weekend was horrible. The domestic's been horrible. The foreign's like double the, you know, I think it cost 250 million just to make John Carter. And they had to have spent the same, if not double, on marketing this damn picture because you can't get away from it. At least you couldn't for the longest time. Billboards, television, so much television on this thing. And none of the, and Todd said he hated the trailer. It looked like crap. They were trying to sell it as the movie that inspired Star Wars and all this other stuff that, you know, we enjoyed because it was written so long ago. This stuff is so, you know, dated, and it's just not, you know, at best it seems like a rehash of Star Wars instead of, you know, what inspired Star Wars. But that's like saying...
But I'm still saying I don't even know if it inspired Star Wars, because from what I know of Star Wars and, of course, what I know of John Carter reading it when I was a kid, I really don't see... I mean, every science fiction has some slight connections, but this one...
Well, that's what they're doing.
It's kind of a reach, you know?
Well, that's not a reach. It's a lie. I mean, has Lucas ever said John Carter inspired me?
No.
I mean, that's like saying, you know, sure, you made a horror movie, and that's like saying, you know, inspired by, you know, you make a horror movie today, Todd, right? You release it, and then somebody gets it, and they say, you know, inspired by Bela Lugosi's Dracula, and it's just because it's a vampire movie. And you nowhere did you ever say, like, oh, I made this, you know, inspired by Bela Lugosi's Dracula. But, of course, it probably is somewhere in deep within your psyche, you know, that movie's in there. It doesn't mean you drew upon your, you know, love or hate or indifference toward it to make your movie. But yeah, of course, if you made a vampire movie, somewhere along the line you've seen Bela Lugosi play Dracula. But it's still a lie. It's a stretch. It's a, you know, it's a con job.
Damn those frickin' Disney folks.
I mean, that's like, you know, the Dark Knight Rises coming out and saying inspired by 1916's The Bat. You know, is it true? Yeah, I guess it is technically true.
That's like saying
inspired by the first movie ever made. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm inspired by the first movie ever made, or there'd be no movie. Sure.
I saw a fan made trailer for John Carter today on Ain't It Cool News, which is pretty good.
No, well, where did Disney go wrong on this? Is it just the name, the trailer? I mean, honestly, that everything I've seen, even the billboards and everything, it all looks like it takes place in this arena where everybody's fighting. It doesn't look like there's any scope to this movie. Little do you know, the guy, you know, the story, you know, the guy's a cowboy, and he's brought into space, you know, and, you know, to fight this battle. He's like a Civil War hero. Is this even dealt with in the film?
Oh yeah, definitely is. It's all in there. It's a good movie. I watched it, and I recommend it.
Now, how did you watch it?
When did I watch it?
Did you see it in 3D?
No, I saw it in 2D.
Mm.
When my eyes closed.
Oh, 2D. Nobody watches 2D anymore, do they?
3D. No, I mean it's. I think that the title was a big problem. And look at Cowboys and Aliens. I mean, I don't think it's a good. He dropped the ball with it, but the title tells you whether you want to see it or not. And people went to see it. It made money. You know, it's not a good movie, but people knew where they were going. Cowboys and Aliens. What if they called it John Smith? You know?
Right, the character's name. Who's the main character in Cowboys and Aliens if they called it that? Like, you know... You know what's funny? Speaking of Hal Needham, this is kind of in the Burt Reynolds universe. I had to go back to the well and watch a classic, and I watched Stick, based on the Elmore Leonard novel, and directed by Burt Reynolds, starring Burt Reynolds. When movies could be carried by somebody's personality, you know, I mean, this was really—it's really a small crime movie, and it's really cool, and you should really check out Stick. But there's a scene in there where, you know, some characters are meeting a Hollywood producer. And he's pitching them this movie, and he says, oh, it's going to be great, blah, blah, blah. Cowboys and Aliens, or Cowboys versus Aliens. That's the name of the movie in Stick.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I thought to myself, did John Favreau see this? Is this like some kind of weird homage to a Burt Reynolds film from the 80s?
Well, Cowboys and Aliens is a comic book.
Yeah, but was it a comic book in the 80s?
Yes.
Really?
I'm pretty sure it was, yeah.
Are you sure about that? I mean, I was a comic book geek when I was a kid. I never heard of anything called Cowboys and Aliens.
I know it was a comic, but I don't know when it was, if it's from the 80s or more recent, but it definitely was a comic first.
Malibu Comics, 2006. Just ring a bell?
Yeah, I'm kind of looking up when it started. I thought it's been around for a while.
Huh.
Because it started out as that black and white series, and I thought, I might be off. But I remember it being like an independent book first.
Well, Stick was 85, so why would they even mention it? It just sounded like such a throwaway, like almost like the writer or whoever. I don't even know if it's in the Elmore Leonard novel. But, you know, it just seemed like they were making a joke. Like, yeah, Cowboys and Aliens, Cowboys versus Aliens or something. You know, like that. It was a throwaway line, but I think it was written as a joke, you know, because he had all these mafia type guys in the room who were supposed to invest in this movie. And his producer was like, yeah, Cowboys versus Aliens. Yeah, I don't know.
It's kind of cool, though.
It's kind of cool. A little geekdom there. I thought that was interesting. But back to this John Carter. I think it'll make its money back. I think these are lies. I think if it doesn't make, you know, $300 million in the first weekend, everybody's disappointed. I mean, it's already made close to $200 million in domestic and foreign. It's only been out a little while. I mean, with home video and Blu-ray and VOD and airplanes and, you know, downloadable content on iTunes and, you know, foreign this and foreign that, I can't see is it not going to make its money back unless they spent that much and you know, unless they spent $1 billion promoting it. How is it not going to make its money back in the next? They own this forever. So
thing's been shoved in our face every 3 seconds. I mean, we can't escape it.
Well, yeah, and they're going to do the same when it comes out on, you know, on DVD, and they're going to do the same for when it's on your cable system and when it goes to HBO. And, you know, all along the line, money's changing hands. The movie doesn't get made, and then, oh, my God, it bombed. It didn't make any money in the opening weekend. That's just the beginning of – that's where they make the most profit is in the theatrical run. But then all along the line – you know, there are foreign rights sold, there are foreign home video sold, there's, you know, oh, China wants it in airplanes, Japan wants it in toilets, whatever. You know, it just goes on, and 5 years from now, they're still making money off of it. 10 years from now, they own this property forever. Don't let them BS you with this crap. You know, what they're really trying to say is, you know, well, you know, the public didn't like it, and, you know, it's your problem. You know, we did this great thing, and you didn't. You know, it bombed.
I'm surprised they didn't blame bootlegging on it.
Well, that's the one thing they didn't. They didn't. I haven't heard that argument toward this one. You know, because apparently it's so bad, no one wants to even bootleg it.
Oh, bootlegs are out there. I mean, of course, everything is bootlegged. So, yeah.
It's just such, to me, it's just fake news. This whole box office nonsense, box office news, it's so fake. Having a little bit of insight into the inner workings of the business, I understand you could have, you know, you could monetize something that's 50 years old and continue to make profit on it. There's no way. I mean, and they have the best business people in the world working at these studios. It's just some kind of, I don't know who it benefits. I don't know if it's a fan base thing where fans are watching and say, oh, it bombed, blah blah blah. Oh yeah, it didn't make. I just don't know where it's coming from and who it benefits to kind of death watch these movies. You know, I would argue that, I mean, Pluto Nash or something. Have these movies? Who knows? Have these? Blech. Yeah, but have they made their money? I don't know. You know, I mean, you could look at like Box Office Mojo or something, and look at how much they invested and how much it made.
Well, there's other things too with the big studios. I mean, when they have a bomb, what they'll do is they'll throw the expenses of some of their other movies into that one.
Yeah.
Right. So it looks like it's inflated. I know when
every business does that.
Going like when you know, at one point Tim Burton was going to direct with Nicolas Cage, etc. They invested so much money just in that before anything was even written, that already if somebody picked up the franchise, like they were already $250 million in the red, just because
that happens with Rob all the time. He took all the money from every release and put it into Goth Kill because it was such a wing ding.
Wait a minute now. We all have our we all have our underperforming titles. Let me tell you, Goth Kill has quite a fan following.
I know.
Is now available on Netflix for rental. So
there you go.
Now stick that in your pipe and
sleep on it.
Suck on it. Yeah.
It's like the DVD equivalent of a sleeping pill, but it's really, I'm glad for you to have it on there.
Hmm.
I would love that movie if it had sex and violence, because with a title like Goth Kill, it needs sex and violence.
You're not the first person to say that.
Don't you? I mean, it's pretty well made. I just thought it needs sex and violence.
It is well made, and it has good. And it gets a really bad rap sometimes, because it does have really good production value for an independent homemade film. But you know, there are two kinds of ways to approach this. Now, somebody like that can come to you with a film, and you can say, "Well, I'll release it if you go and shoot some nudity and violence, and I want to see gore, I want to see stomachs ripped open, and people biting into each other, and I want to see nipples and all that." And you know, that's one way to go.
You
about
just
it.
Mentioned Mr. Reed's entire critiquing system.
Exactly, and maybe if when he gets to it. And you know what? Maybe the movie would make more money that way. Or there's the other way where you can say, you know, this is the filmmaker's vision. I believe in it. I'm going to take the trip with the filmmaker and see what happens. Because you just don't know. I see movies that make money in the independent realm that don't have any sex and violence in it. But it's, you know, the people somehow gravitate toward it.
They're like called Disney.
No, I'm talking about indie horror films, man. I'm talking about something like Oz Zombies. You ever see Oz Zombies? You ever see that
again,
movie?
Again, needed some sex and violence.
Yeah, see, needed some sex and violence, but it's a hit. It's a big winner. It makes money. It's not for me, for somebody else, but I mean, it's out there. It was in Redbox.
So it is, but Mr. Ree, am I the only one that doesn't understand how that movie's become such a success?
Which, Oz Zombies?
Yeah, I mean, I like it okay, but I mean, why is that a success, but Goth Kill isn't? I don't get it.
Well, I didn't see it, so I don't know.
Here's the thing, Todd. I mean, not everyone wants to see sex and violence. Sometimes 12-year-olds...
Losers!
Sometimes 12-year-olds want to watch horror movies, and their parents want them to watch one that doesn't have sex and violence.
Well, that's okay. Put in The Ring.
It's not... No. Yeah, but you can't tell people what to watch. I mean, they have to make their decision.
Damn it.
And somebody has to be providing that content, right? I mean, it doesn't. It's fine what we might want or what we grew up on. I mean, I grew up, 10 years old, going into grindhouses on 42nd Street with my dad, seeing all the sex and violence for a lifetime in a matter of like 3 or 4 years. some parents wouldn't want to do that. You know, that would be looked upon as child abuse these days. When are you going to start showing your kids sex and violence, Todd? Tell me.
Let me tell you something. My son, I never really shielded him from, like, we went and saw Starship Troopers when he was a kid. Now, during the sex scene, we went out and got some candy and then came back in, because, I mean, I really didn't want him to see boobs flopping, and with Charlize Theron, there wasn't much boobs to flop, let's be honest. But
Charlize Theron? She's not even in that movie.
Yes, she is. She's in Starship Troopers. And she shows her boobs.
Is that true, Mr. Ree?
Who?
Charlize Theron?
No. You know, it's Denise Richards, right?
Yeah.
Man, you guys are way off.
Oh, the other girl. The other girl. The girl from Pitch Black, right? Is she in it?
Well, you guys need help, no. Man. What am I going to do?
She's not in the film. She's not. There's a girl who looks like her in the film, but she's not in the film. I'm telling you.
I always thought it was Charlize Theron.
Debunked right here, live on the air. Movies Hate You. Sponsored by BMovie.com.
You know who it was? I remember who it was now. It was that chick that's been on TV shows. She was on Law & Order. It's Dina Mayer.
There you go.
Yeah, that's her, because she was on Law & Order. Damn, she does. She looks just like Charlize Theron. Now I know what was happening to me. Yeah.
There's a similarity, but yeah, it's not the same person. Don't try to stumpers, man.
Damn, I'm proud.
But one point though about box office and stuff, how a movie performs in its opening weekend has nothing to do with the quality of the movie, because if people are seeing it for the first time, it's how did the marketing get the people into the theater or not. So I mean, you can't blame like John Carter. I mean, people don't understand that, or I mean, they see, oh, this film is a big bomb. They make jokes about how bad it is, but it has absolutely nothing to do with the quality of the movie.
Absolutely not.
You know, and in this case, it's actually a good movie, and I think it's kind of slow paced, at least at the beginning, but it's a good movie. I mean, I would recommend it to anybody. You know, I can't speak to something like the Eddie Murphy movie, 1,000 Words. It was also a huge bomb. I mean, that looks terrible to me.
I mean, this, it's almost like this guy is like intentionally bombing. I mean, it's really. I mean, no one is looking at Eddie Murphy as one of the best kind of con job performance artists of all times. Up with Andy Kaufman as far as this is like a meta career. It's like this guy. It's like anything he stars in is bombing, like as an Eddie Murphy vehicle. You know, he's in other stuff. I mean, even that stupid Ben Stiller movie, Tower Heist, where it bombed. I mean, it's so funny. Somebody who was so integral to comedy for so long to just bomb on such an epic level, and then he keep making these movies. It's almost like a joke. It's almost like you can see like. Yeah, and when they finish the shoot, Eddie Murphy like opens his wallet and starts paying everybody. Like, yeah, we got another one, guys. Yeah, we're gonna get him this time. Wait till they see this piece of crap. They thought Pluto Nash was bad. Wait till they see the one where there's 1,000 little Eddie Murphys in my head. Wait till they see that one. Did you see that one, Mr. Ree?
That's what I'm talking about. 1,000 Words, right?
Is that the one? No. There's the other one where there's 1,000 little Eddie Murphys. That control the big Eddie Murphy. He's like a robot. Yes, I'm telling you. Somebody wrote that. Somebody got paid to write that movie.
Yeah. I don't know what the deal is. I mean, and they're still, and he's probably getting a lot of money to make these movies too. It's not even, I mean, Kevin Costner was the joke for a while. I mean, everything that he was in was, you know, a bigger bomb than the last, but now it's like, they're not throwing $20 million a pop at Kevin Costner to make movies, but they are for Eddie Murphy for some.
Well, I think it has to do with you know there's stuff. I think stuff does make money. You know, it's like a weird like I think for every one of those, I think it's Meet Dave or right that was the name of it. And when he started doing kids movies, well, I don't know on the kids market did these make movies, but then you know he's involved in all the Shrek movies, and those have made billions of dollars for everybody. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like it balances out in a weird way for him.
It's kind of cheating though. I mean, the Shrek movies aren't successful because Eddie Murphy is the voice of the donkey. I mean,
he added to it. Won't you say?
Well, yeah, but I don't.
And it's a good portrayal. The character, you know, it's a good character. It's a memorable character.
There was some list recently, I think, like Hollywood Reporter or Variety or something, of what actors or what performers have made the most money. It's like a cumulative, you know. So you take all the movies they've been in, add it together, and you know, you would think it would be like Harrison Ford because you've got the Star Wars and the indie films and. You know, and other hits, people like that. But like, number one was this obscure actor who's just a voice actor, and he just happens to be like in all the Pixar movies.
Okay.
So they consider him like the number one money making star of all time, and it's like, well, people don't go to those movies because of him. they go for other reasons. Where you know, Eddie Murphy, people don't, kids don't say, oh, great, the new Eddie Murphy movie's out when the new Shrek movie comes out.
I think he's also going to be the voice of Hong Kong Phooey. They're doing a Hong Kong Phooey movie, yes, finally. So, you know, it may, who knows, you know, if that'll ever happen. But, well, it's interesting because, I mean, then he'll do something like Dreamgirls, where he gets praised, you know. I mean, it's in there, Eddie. You got to get it out. You got to get in there. Boy, they was going to host the Oscars. Remember that? I mean, you know, there's something in there. You can't, it's like almost his stuff was so good early on. He was so good that he's really still trading on that. I mean, it hasn't, it's like, oh, every time somebody's like, he's going to do it this time. He's going to bring back the magic. And I'm going to put money up for it because I know, and it's going to be the comeback. You know, Hollywood loves the comeback, right? So that's it. It's like the comeback. Here it is. This is going to be it. It's going to be Imagine That. That's the movie. Or Norbit. Norbit's going to be the big one.
Yeah.
That's going to be it.
He was so young when it all happened to him that, you know, he's been this complacent multi-billionaire or whatever since he's been like 24. So, you know, what did he have to go back to? Does he even remember that spark or whatever it was that he had when he was 21?
Well, and they've been talking about a return to stand-up for him for a long time, so who knows?
I don't know. I mean, someone like Burr Reynolds, for instance, you know, he had his long history and he made a ton of just terrible, terrible movies and bad choices and whatever. But, you know, he had a career before. He had a lot of stuff he could draw on. So when he makes his comeback, as it were, like in Boogie Nights, you know, he has something he can tap into. But Eddie Murphy has been complacent for so long, and it's basically since he's been an adult, that I don't even see him finding that.
I don't know. Maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he doesn't care. Maybe that spark is gone. You know, I want to make movies for my kids. You know, that's it. He's playing on somebody else's dime. He's having a good time. And, you know, so, something, or he's got pictures on somebody, man. He's got the goods on somebody in Hollywood.
He must, and that's the other thing that's peculiar about it is his career was nearly done when he was busted with a tranny hooker.
Yeah.
Nobody seems to remember that.
No, well, I do. He was just giving her a ride. Remember that?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, I do that all the time, yeah.
Yeah, that's a different kind of ride. He was driving her around in his car. Well, listen, speaking, I mean, you know, if you're going to revoke Eddie Murphy's license, then in my opinion, you need to revoke many people's licenses. And when it comes to directors, somebody like George Romero needs his license revoked. And the hell with you horror fanboys. He needs his license revoked. He can't make a picture anymore. He can't do it. That spark is gone. The spark is gone. You can't tell me, Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead, Survival of the Dead, together don't live up to 5 minutes of Dawn of the Dead. So, he's gone. Forget about it.
Can I interject something real quick, though?
I
have to interject one thing, sorry.
And I love Romero.
I'm just one of the few people I know that actually really, I went to a theater and I really enjoyed Land of the Dead.
Well, Land of the Dead, I saw opening night as well because I was so psyched, and it was so disappointing in many ways. But after Diarrhea of the Dead and Survival of the Dead, Land of the Dead actually holds up. Yeah, it's okay.
Well, when I watched it all, I mean, I watched it on Blu-ray. I don't understand why that movie's so hated. I think it's really well made. I think it's got good acting. I think the story's fun. It's got
it's cool a little effects. Weak and disjointed, and it's a little too ambitious for the budget.
Well, yeah, but that's always true with Romero.
It's a little too heavy-handed. You know, it's almost like all the subtle, cool things that Romero would fit into this really cool, like, survival horror movie, he kind of brought to the surface. And it's like, you know, it's the poor people versus the rich people and blah, blah, blah. It was like so pounded over your head. Okay, yeah, okay, I get it. Yeah, okay, I get it. He's a bad guy. Okay, I get it. It just didn't have the subtleties of early Romero. It didn't live in its own organic space. It was just like, here are the messages, and here's the scene where it's going to be told. It wasn't woven into the film like in his other films. Like how many times did you see Dawn of the Dead until years later, you start to realize, oh yeah, it's really a commentary on consumerism. You know, somebody had to tell you that. You know, you had to read that somewhere from somebody older. You know, you didn't think that. You know, because there were no, you know, even the dialogue in Dawn of the Dead, you know, when Peter says we're thieves and bad guys, but they're the good guys. But wait a minute, but they're saying they're the bad guys. You know, it's like the lines are really gray in that movie. Who's good and who's bad? Who has the rights to this mall? Who doesn't? The bikers have just as much as a right as, you know, our group does, because it doesn't belong to anyone. You know, it brings up a lot of really cool, subtle issues. But if you don't want to deal with any of that, you just got a kick-ass action movie, and you got a cool action horror movie. You know, and there are some horror moments too, that really scary, claustrophobic, gross horror moments. It's a perfect film in many ways, and then to have them do some crud like Land of the Dead, where it's like, you know, okay, you're kind of rehashing the whole thing all over again on a different scale. I don't know, you know, and Day of the Dead holds up as well as making those kind of points. It's a little more heavy-handed, but you know, it's still there's a lot under the surface there. But But besides Romero, I don't want to get on Romero here. Romero, you know, Romero is a hero. But another revoked license that's coming in my book is your friend Tim Burton, Todd, with this new Dark Shadows trailer that's going around the web. What the hell? What's going on? He's alienated everyone.
Yuck.
The Love at First Bite reboot?
Maybe? Yeah, the Love at First Bite reboot. They finally did it. Is George Hamilton have a cameo in this?
I hope so, yeah.
It's insane. I mean, why call it Dark Shadows? I mean, it's not. It's like, you know, goofy vampire Twilight spoof. It's silly. Yeah, it's silly, like all his movies. He's ruined another franchise. How many franchises is Tim Burton going to ruin single-handedly before they let Kevin Smith do it?
Well, what's peculiar to me about the Dark Shadows thing is that it's a cult show to start with. I mean, a lot of people remember it very fondly, myself included, from, you know, when I was a kid rushing home after school, blah blah blah. But the core audience takes it very seriously. It isn't a funny show. It isn't a stupid, goofy, campy show.
It is campy, though. Yeah, they think it's real.
Of course, it's camp.
Dark Shadows.
It's like wrestling. It's like, don't call wrestling fake to a wrestling fan. It's like, duh, we get it. You know, we get that the acting is bad. We get the script is, you know, too.
I got you.
They try too much, too hard to put the stuff in. Whatever, you know.
But if Burton made a Dark Shadows movie for Dark Shadows fans, he'd have 50 people in the theater. You know what I mean? In every city. It's not, you know, I understand. It's, you know, you can't make a series like the TV show. You know, first of all, you put everybody to sleep. It's just not. We've come too far with the way
you
we.
Could make it
You could have made a serious, kind of creepy. He could have taken this and set this whole Twilight tweeny vampires being True Blood. All this, you know. He could have set this all on its head. He could have really taken it on as a genre. And redefined it in some way. The truth is, the man just doesn't have the goods to do that. He has his style. It's always been the same. This looks like Beetlejuice 2 to me. It really has that feeling, and I guess people like this, but I don't get it. I liked Beetlejuice when I was younger. I don't know if, you know, it doesn't hold up for me. It's too fake. It's too fake. His movies are completely, it's like,
I love Pee-wee's Big Adventure. I love Nightmare Before Christmas. I love all of his work.
Good movie is Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Well,
because
look at
Big Fish sucked, dude.
I like
Everybody plays that game. You know, he threw the Peter Jackson curveball. Do the serious movie so you win some awards. Get out of here with that. Pee-wee, the material, Paul Rubens being the material, brilliant actor, carries that movie, of course. But you know, it's perfect for Paul Reubens. It's perfect for that character, and it works. That world works. But carrying that over into horror and sci-fi, Planet of the Apes, it just doesn't work. This like kind of hyper theatrical approach. We are sponsored by bmovie.com. Mr. Reed, thank you for joining us. Thank you for no DVD reviews again. You're going to get me canned. Todd, our producer, thank you very much as always. And we will see you again next time. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Here's the exit music. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.